Thank you, Felicia. Thank you for that prayer, Julia. I earnestly believe that I'm dependent upon that prayer in the sense that whatever happens now in the next few minutes wouldn't happen without that prayer. I believe that. I mean, there are other things, too, that go into what's about to happen besides that prayer. But if you subtract that prayer, what will happen in the next 40 minutes or whatever wouldn't. So thank you for asking for what you ask for, utterly dependent upon the Spirit to move through your prayer. And thank you, Missy, for that enthusiastic prayer that you prayed up here with your eyes open. Is that legal to pray with your eyes open? I hope so, too. I do it all the time. Closing our eyes does help to eliminate distractions and stuff, but thank you for that enthusiastic, heartfelt prayer of worship. Yes, and I have my bride with me since August 4th of 1973, and among God's greatest gifts to me, and you'll get to hear from her in a few minutes. I have an assigned topic. We have an assigned topic. It's this: affirming your spouse in a gospel-centered way. So there's a way to recognize good things in your spouse without idolizing your spouse, without worshiping your spouse, to say really good things to your spouse, about your spouse, all the time, regularly, without worshiping your spouse. You can do it in a God-centered way by thanking God for the manifestations of his own character through your spouse. And time permitting, we'll get to specific ways to do that, but I want to lay some background here first. For those who maybe come to this topic for the first time, may think, oh, he's going to talk about self-esteem. And no, I am not talking about self-esteem. This is definitely not about self-esteem. I'm not about esteeming the self, ourselves, which would derail the verticality, would derail worship of God by making much of us and eliminating him from the picture. Maybe not through any hostility, but just leaving him out of the equation. Jails are overrun with people who have plenty of self-esteem. The only person they esteem is themselves. They got lots of self-esteem. No self-esteem shortage in the jails. Your stuff is my stuff. That's self-esteem. I don't care about you. I'm busy caring about me. That's self-esteem. I'm esteeming myself. It's corrupt. We don't want that. We don't want self-esteem. Asylums are full of self-esteem. Back when I was an undergraduate student in psychology, I worked at the state hospital up in St. Cloud in a locked ward. And these people don't give any thought to anyone else. They're in their little obsessive compulsive world. Some of them are paranoid. There was one guy who was always, he was always ducking behind things. And he's, have you seen him? He's going to get me. Who's going to get you? Nixon. Yeah, funny and not funny. Full of self-esteem, worried about himself all day long. I'm not advocating self-esteem when I'm advocating affirming each other in marriage. So marriages and divorces are also full of self-esteem. That's not what I'm trying to promote here. So let me move on to what I am. It's not about self-esteem. It's about esteeming the work of God in the lives of others. So I'm holding the 8-month-old grandson back there a few minutes ago and admiring what he's doing when he's making all these noises back there. He was growling like, what, in the second Star Wars movie, what are those two-legged things that Luke Skywalker goes out into the icy wilderness riding? A tauntaun? Tauntaun? He was sounding like a tauntaun back there, you know, or something. God is doing that. He's developing speech. He's learning how to make all the sounds that will be requisite for learning how to talk, and I thank God for all those little brrrs and all that stuff that's going on there. He's learning how to control those sounds, when to make them and when not to make them and how to make them and what volume to make them and whether you should make like that or like that. That's all learned, and he's doing his work back there. We're maybe relaxing and being refreshed. He's doing his work back there, developing in the strength that God supplies. All right, so now, this affirming thing is a key. I'm assuming that all of you women came here today probably with more than one key, probably. Maybe a key to your car, maybe a key to your house, keys to other things. This key will open this building. And what I want to say about keys is that they're not the main thing about the thing. So in this church campus here, this key's not the main thing. I mean, we got a gymnasium, and we've got a stainless steel kitchen, and we have offices, and we have audiovisual equipment and classrooms, and we have a copy machine that costs the price of an automobile, and we got all this stuff here. And if you don't have this, you can't have that. Or how many of you have ever locked your keys in your car? All right, yes, true story is being told now. Just that feeling of, oh, have you had that feeling? Yeah, I have. Yeah, like, there's the car. Perfectly good automobile. It's got a power plant. It's got the transmission, and it's got wheels, and its steering wheel, and a brake, and maybe some other accoutrements, maybe a cup holder, and a radio, and things in there, and you can't have them because you don't have the key. Key's not the main thing to the car. When you bought that car, you didn't say to the dealer, wait a minute, I am not buying that car till I can feel the key and look at the key and smell the key and, you know, bite the key, whatever. It wasn't the main thing. But without the thing, you can't have the rest of the thing, the car. Or I have a house key on here, and one night after an elder meeting, it was about midnight, a little after midnight, got home. Kenny Stokes had driven me home. And got out of the car and did this thing. Oh, and Vicky's gone. I don't have the key to my house. And I wasn't smart enough yet. We had just moved in there to hide one. So there, up there in that second floor, that's my bedroom in there. My pajamas are in there. And there's that kitchen right there, and there's a bowl of cereal in there that I could be enjoying, except I can't because I don't have the key. Key's not the main thing about the house. When we bought the house, we didn't say, you know, we want to see the key. But we did have, we had the boiler checked, and we had the roof checked, and we had all kinds of things checked. Those are way more important. Walls, foundation, wiring. Didn't think about the key. They just threw that on the table at the very tail end of the transaction. But without the key, we can't have all the more important stuff. Okay, in your marriage, there's way more important stuff than what I'm going to talk about here for the next few minutes. Way more important. It's way more important that you have the Spirit of God. It's way more important that you are born again. It's way more important that you're not in a coma. We could list a number of things that are more important than what I'm going to talk about, except you'll forfeit the enjoyment of all those things in your marriage without this. It will go away. In my almost 40 years of pastoring, I have yet to observe a divorce where they kept up the affirmations. In every case, the affirmations went away. They evaporated. They stopped seeing the good that God was doing in their partner, and they hardened their hearts. So I'm saying that it's not optional. That is, doing affirmation and not doing affirmation both produce an effect, but not the same effect. You can affirm your spouse, and there will be consequences of that, or you can just say, I'm not good at this, I'm not going to do it, okay, and you'll get a different consequence. You'll get a different outcome. It's universal, whether you're aware of it or not aware of it, and I'm helping you be aware of it. This is a gift to you that, I don't know, Felicia, are you the one who came up with this topic? Where are you? Was this your idea? Okay, well, the committee loves you because they're trying to put a tool in your toolbox or an extra key on your key fob so that you can make your marriage flourish and get the positive consequences of it. So it's like a fire not stoked goes out. If you have a fireplace, you don't put any logs on the fire, it'll eventually go out. A refrigerator unplugged rots the eggs. Ever had a malfunction in your electrical system or your refrigerator? And pretty soon, the first day I taught school, 1974, first day of school, came to school, and the school reeked. Stunk terrible. They had, the previous weekend, they'd brought in all the food for the Monday lunch program, like 100 pounds of hamburger or something like that, and they put it in the chest freezer and turned it on, and instead of cooling, it heated on a very low heat. And they had to not only throw out the meat, they had to throw out the refrigerator, and paint the kitchen. I mean, it was lousy. A garden not tended produces weeds, not vegetables. Any eyewitnesses of that here? Yes. Okay. I'm saying the same thing about affirmation. Affirmation is the fire-stoking, refrigerator-electrifying, garden-tending aspect of relationships. It's not optional. You can't say, well, this is a good refrigerator, perfectly good refrigerator, just bought it, it's new, it's on warranty, but I don't know whether I want to plug it in or not. It's ridiculous. So to say, I don't know if I want to affirm my spouse or not, you're going to get a consequence, whether you do it or don't do it. But it won't be the same consequence, whether you do it or don't do it. The principles of affirmation apply universally to all human relationships, including your relationship with God. God inhabits the praises of his people. He communes with those who are saying good things to him about him. Your relationship with your dog is better if you say, attaboy, Rover, good job. Your relationships with your children, your relationships with your coworkers, your relationships with your parents, your mothers-in-law. No, it's mother-in-laws. Is that the right word? Mother-in-laws instead of mothers-in-law? Mother-in-laws, father-in-laws, son-in-laws, all hinge in some measure on whether you turn the key in the latch on these relationships. Proverbs 11:25, he who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. This is the boomerang principle in the Bible, the law of the harvest. You reap what you sow. Would you like to be refreshed? Plant refreshment. Would you like to be affirmed? And the answer is yes, you would. Therefore, affirm others. You want to be appreciated, don't you? Even if you fail. If you made an effort at something, you want somebody to say, well, that was a good try. Good. Thank you for that good try. I think you want that, don't you? Yes. In fact, I'll argue that there's something wrong with a person's faith if they don't want God to affirm them. You should want to get to heaven one day and hear God say, well done, good and faithful servant. God's all about affirmation. If you want to know more about this, Vicki used to get after me because I would talk on this subject in various places, and she'd say, did you mention your book? And I'd say, no. She'd mention your book. Okay, this is not about selling a book, but I wrote a book on this subject called Practicing Affirmation, and I got a box of them on the welcome desk over there, and they cost me $10. So if you want one, you can throw $10 in there, but nobody's going to be there manning the money. It's honor system. And if you don't have $10, I'd like you to have one, so just take one. Okay? Does that feel like too high pressure of a sales pitch there? Okay. So there's more about how God models affirmation for us in that book, and you can pick one up if you want. Law of the harvest. Caution. God, not others, is the ultimate source of our refreshment. So when you bless your spouse, it's not necessarily true that your spouse will be the one that rebounds that affirmation back to you, but God will notice. God's paying attention. We can show that in Matthew 10. And whoever in the name of a disciple gives to one of these little ones even a cup of cold water to drink, truly I say to you, he shall not lose his reward. So does you give a cup of cold water to the little one, does your reward come from the little one?
Never.
On point. Yes. Who gives the reward? God gives the reward. When we do these good things, God rewards us when we refresh others. You see three parties there. There's God, who's one of the parties, we're one of the parties, and the others that we're affirming are the third party. So here's a Peanuts cartoon, and the two gals are saying to Charlie Brown, well, what are you doing here? Come on, go on home. We don't want you around here. Who asked you to come by in the first place? Nobody. Go on home. And he slinks off. And the final frame is the bewildering thing in many relationships, and I'll let them say it. You know, it's a strange thing about Charlie Brown. You almost never see him laugh. And some people wonder why their spouse isn't happy with them, why their children don't like to be around them, or their teenagers start to go in their bedroom and lock the door a lot, or get involved in gangs, and they're out of the house a lot, they don't want to be home, and so on. I'm saying one key is affirmation. When a moderately rebellious teenager can't get any affirmation from his parents, and he's always being coached. You know, pick up your things. Got your homework done? Don't look at your mother like that. Straighten your collar. What? Everything's not quite good enough? But when they spray-painted graffiti on the bridge, the gang yucked it up. Cool! Okay, who's going to have influence on that teenager? Those that affirm. We'll get to the principle in a minute. So before Vicky talks, here's how the ratio works. Affirmation, ratio. You know how to affirm. I'm guessing in this culture, you wouldn't be affirmed. You wouldn't be married if you didn't know how to affirm. You know how to say, good job, way to go. I like you. I like being with you. Here's the password to my phone. There's little affirming things that we do, thousands of them, to people that we are showing appreciation for. And then there's a ratio. I used to struggle with what's the math on this. And I read academic literature, and there were formulas from 42 to 1 on down. And I used to kind of think, well, maybe 10 to 1, a metric system or something maybe would work. That's moot. The point is, in the eyes of the person you're affirming, your relationship has to be to them more affirming than correcting. And we default to correction. It has to happen. I mean, love affirms, but love also corrects. We're always fixing things. You know, I get up to speak and Vicky says, check your fly and stuff like that. Well, she loves me and she's correcting. In fact, she's heading off a possible error there. Or there are times when I'm getting ready to go out the door to work. She says, are you going to wear that?
Not anymore.
Yeah, that's the right answer. I used to try to explain, well, I haven't worn these particular pants for a while, and this shirt's not completely worn out yet. And so I've learned, if she says, are you wearing that today? I just start unbuttoning the shirt and taking it off. And what would you like me to wear? From the heart. You know better about these things. And even if you didn't know better about these things, wouldn't I want to wear what my lover wants me to wear if it makes them happy? It's good for relationships. It's affirming. So what happens is when there's more correction than there is affirmation, a deficit develops in the relationship. This is the part that's, what I'm saying is universal and non-optional. You don't get to vote on whether the ratio is in play in your marriage. It is in play in your marriage. And Proverbs 12:18, there's one whose rash words are like sword thrusts, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. So imagine I've got a sword in my hand, and whoosh, how long does it take me to injure? Yeah, split second, right. How long does it take to heal? Long time. Maybe leaves a scar. Maybe forfeits an appendage. Maybe kills. And Solomon is saying words are like that. Rash words are like a sword thrust. They do damage. It's not like, well, okay, I didn't mean that. I'm sorry. And now things are back to equal. No, there's this long healing now, even if the rash words are forgiven. So it's like this. If you look on this continuum, towards the left is insufficient affirmation, and to the right is plenty of healthy affirmation. All relationships drift to the left. Your relationships with your kids, your relationships with your coworkers, your relationships with your spouse. They all drift this way by themselves. It's the nature of things. It's the second law of thermodynamics. Your relationship with your spouse is wearing out unless you put proactive energy upstream. You got to paddle to get upstream. The stream is flowing this way. And you got to crank up your engine or paddle just to stay even, much less to make gains in your relationship. The natural winds blow to the left. Correction accelerates the wind to the left. Pick, 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 nag, nag, nag. You've read the texts from Solomon about a nagging wife is like a dripping faucet. Be better to live in the corner of an attic than with a a wife who is quarrelsome, that kind of thing, practicing affirmation is non-optional. I've made that point. Now, here are three things that can happen. There are more than three, but here are three. The person will stop hearing your correction. Your husband will stop hearing you if all he gets from you is correction. He just tunes it out. Gosh, she's that way all the time. You know, this isn't right, and that isn't right, and, you know, I don't like this thing. Okay. And it just, he might not even be aware, but he just kind of tunes down his hearing aid when it's in your direction. A second thing is that I'll stop hearing you, not just your corrections, anything. They don't want to be with you. This is what explains about 85% of the teenagers in Western culture do something that's called blackout. They don't want to talk to their parents. They don't want to be in the same room with their parents. It's not that they don't want their parents' corrections. They don't want anything from their parents. They wouldn't ask you the time of day. They want to avoid you. And I don't know if you've ever been in a bad season in your marriage where it got to this, but it's very painful and miserable. There's good news, and it's coming. Proverbs 18:14, a man's spirit will endure sickness, but a crushed spirit who can bear? And a crushed spirit gets to us through this correction stuff, a diet of it. Third thing, they can become oppositional if there's more correction than affirmation, meaning that somebody will be against something simply because you're in favor of it. And you can picture it this way, that it gets to be towards evening, and one spouse says to the other, it's getting late, why don't we have a bite of supper? And the other one, it's been a long day, it's been a long week, I don't know if I feel like fixing anything. Well, okay, how about we'll go out and we'll grab a bite to eat somewhere. Well, we got to put our coat on, and we got to go out on the slippery sidewalks and drive in this traffic. Well, okay, how about if we order something in? Well, it's at the end of the pay cycle, and we've been spending a lot of money, and I don't know if we should be spending money like this. You can see how whatever one partner suggests, the other partner opposes. They're oppositional. How did they get that way? I'm suggesting that the first spouse modeled it. Criticizing. This isn't good enough. That isn't good enough. You don't get to finish that comment. I'm going to interrupt you. I mean, nobody says it that way. But that's what interruption says. Your comments are not valuable. My comments are valuable. Consider affirmation and correction to be like a checking account. Affirmations are the deposits. Corrections are the checks you write on that. And if you write too many checks, pretty soon your corrections bounce. And if you continue to write checks on that, your account will be closed at many retailers. They don't want your checks anymore, even if you've made a bunch of deposits now. And if you continue to write bad checks, you go to jail. This is the oppositional part. You're under arrest. Get out. This is about earning the right to be heard or gaining a hearing. Now, here comes, if you're only going to write down one thing from this whole talk, this next sentence would be the thing to write down. People are influenced by those who praise them. Would you like to have influence in your husband's life? Three of you would like to have influence in your husband's life. This is how to get some of it. Affirm your husband. This is how to gain a hearing in the lives of your children, the lives of your parents, the lives of anybody who knows you. Affirm what's affirmable. No, not everything's affirmable. I'm not saying that we ignore that. I've already admitted that love also corrects. But turn up the affirmation dial. It is a key to your relationship. You catch more flies with honey than with vinegar. The old adage, and another one is a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. And affirmations are the sugar. Now, there is some medicine, there is some correction, but it goes down way easier if there's been a lot of sugar along the way. Now, I think we're ready for Vicky. Yes, we're ready for Vicky. Ready, Vicky? Let's hear it for Vicky.
So I've been asked to briefly share with you some of my observations and experiences related to affirmation. One of my definitions is that people feel cared for. So when I feel affirmed, I feel like somebody's caring about me and caring for me, and also caring for others and noticing others. And I'd like to affirm my husband and tell you that he lives what he teaches and preaches. He affirms me and others daily, and sometimes multiple times a day. I get notes from him every day, a note. I have shoeboxes full. And his poems would probably fill a very large book if I tried to have them published. He's really a good poem writer. And some of you have probably received a note or notes from Pastor Sam. He makes calls to and for me, lots of hugs, lots of service. Like this morning, he was out early, you know, shoveling the walks, so I didn't have to. Protection and provision, he prays with and for me, gives me lots of attention and smiles, plans trips, and we have many, many laughs in our house because he's a very funny person. And he doesn't try to be funny, it just oozes out of him. Oh, that's a good thing. Sometimes when we're around the house, just he's doing work at his desk and I'm upstairs on my computer or something and we run into each other. He'll say, "Hi, Vicky." Just, you know, like as if we haven't seen each other for a long time. And it's just a sweet way of acknowledging my presence and adding lightness to the day. Little story about affirmation. When his book first came out, he got asked to do the radio program down in Little Rock, Arkansas with Dennis Rainey and Bob Lapine. And I was sitting in the sound booth with the engineer. And the engineer, the whole time he was talking, was just nodding. And then he said to me, he said, "Over on my desk there is a box, and I keep all my notes in there that people have sent me that have said good job about something." So it was a way of affirming what Sam was saying, is that, and I think maybe all of us, I have notes that I keep from people that I, you know, and I don't pull them out very often, but every once in a while I look through them and get fresh encouragement. Other ways to affirm, and some of these I do, I ask a lot of questions of people instead of talking about myself. I say, "How are you doing?" And I'm sure all of you do these. Listen. People have told me I'm a good listener because I'm not a talker by nature. Serve, be active, be involved. Show up. Sam and I always talk about showing up is half of life. Even when you don't want to be there, show up. Call, text, email, connect, and check in. And one of my things, I try to respond quickly to texts and emails and phone calls. Do things before I'm asked. Pray for and with people. Bake banana bread for my friends. I was going to bring some for Heather today, but I just didn't get it done. So maybe later this week. Make meals, you know, send restaurant gift cards. Snail mail, I still do snail mail cards. Host and plan bridal showers and baby showers. I've done mentoring one-on-one in groups, leading Titus II groups, leading and hosting a small group, pre-marriage counseling with my husband, and then just hospitality. For me, that has meant not only living or inviting people into my home, but serving others in a way that provides venues for people to feel welcomed, valued, and safe, and that hopefully models ministry to them so that they can learn by watching and then do it themselves. And when I was on the Women's Ministries Board for years, that was one of our things, is just provide opportunities for women to get together and connect. Not everybody is going to come to every event or want to, but make it available so that people can connect and make friends. So as mothers, oh, one more thing. How do I sense and feel and experience and observe God's affirmation and love for me, his presence, his peace? John 14:27 is one of my favorite verses. His joy, his voice, his sheep know his voice, his nearness. Zephaniah talks about the Lord thy God in the midst of thee is mighty. His discipline, ouch. About 23 years ago, I went through a near-death celiac experience. And it was a time of spiritual warfare, and feeling both loved and pummeled by God. Like he was holding me, but he was punching me in the stomach, and literally it was my stomach that was the problem. still is, but his goodness, his faithfulness, and his provision, and his promises. Now, I want to leave you today with three word pictures that have been really helpful to me as a mom, and they have to do with affirmation. Do you want to hit the Aslan one? Okay, so the first one is the paws of Aslan. So it was painted by a family friend of a boy who had a brain tumor and was undergoing surgeries. And the context for it is in C.S. Lewis's book, The Last Battle, invaders are approaching and Narnia is almost certain to lose and vanish forever. Just before the battle, a child whispers her fears to the king. "Courage, child," he replies. "We are all between the paws of Aslan." So when you're having a tough day, or even when you're not, this is a comforting and hope-giving word picture for me, and maybe it will be for you, to just picture yourself between the paws of Aslan, who is Jesus, his presence and his nearness. Another second word picture would be under his wings. "Keep me as the apple of your eye, hide me in the shadow of your wings, and cover me with your feathers, and under your wings will I trust." And again, as mothers, we always want our babies under our wings. I remember when our girls were growing up, it was always a comfort when everybody was in the house under the same roof and everybody was safe and home and there together. We want our babies under our wings, and we also want to teach them to fly. There's a song I was going to have Missy do this morning, but she said probably nobody knows it. It's an old hymn called Under His Wings. So if you have a chance, get on your computer and go on YouTube and listen to it. Under His Wings, I'm Safely Abiding. It's just a really cool song. And then the third one is word pictures called The Balcony of Heaven. Decades ago, a gal named Joyce Landorf wrote a book in which she described balcony people. So this has a lot to do with affirmation. We as Christians are standing on the shoulders and the prayers and the legacies of those who have gone on before. Missy's lost her dad. I've lost both my parents. Sam's lost both his parents, grandparents. There's a lot of people in heaven waiting for us. And or there's people here, alive or dead, that are cheering and encouraging and affirming and shouting hope to us. We can call them the great cloud of witnesses from Hebrews 12:1. But there's many times when I'm feeling discouraged, I picture my mom and dad leaning over the balcony of heaven and cheering me on, saying, "Don't quit, Vicky. Heather's lost her mom. Run the race for the prize of the high calling in Christ Jesus. It will be worth it all." So one of my favorite verses is from Psalm 71:17. "Oh God, from my youth you have taught me, and I still proclaim your wondrous deeds. So even to old age and gray hairs, oh God, do not forsake me until I proclaim your might to the next generation." A way to proclaim God's might to the next generation is to affirm in them what is of God. So I'm pass it back to Sam.
Generally, our failure to affirm others is not rooted in them but us. So you might say, "Well, yeah, but my husband, he's a piece of work." Vicky's married to one of those who's a piece of work. And you might say about your kids, "What is with that child?" I'm not denying any of that. But our failure to affirm is not rooted in them but in us, because God is at work in all of them, all of us. Every human being has the image of God stamped in them, and they reflect him in some way, shape, or form. And if we go looking for it, we can find it. We can identify it. And he gets honor if we call it out and commend it. Much like if you look out there at that sky out there, and there it is. I see some clouds way over there, and I see some snowflakes occasionally blowing off the roof. And I can say that is impressive that this planet has an atmosphere in which we can live and breathe without any apparatus. The only planet that we know of in among the billions and multiply billions of heavenly bodies in the cosmos. And we can look out there and say, the heavens are declaring the glory of God, which is what the Bible teaches us to say about it. However, if we don't look out the window and we don't say, "Wow, God, those heavens are really something because you're really something," then he doesn't get the same glory he would get as if we do look out the window and say, wow, look at those heavens. They are really something. Well, so it is with what he's doing in the people around us, even unbelievers. So you have a small child who helps mommy, serves. That's a reflection of God in there. And to call it out and say, wow, you helped mommy. Way to go. That's a good thing. That's a God thing. Can we bring God into affirming human beings? Yeah, that's the point here. So Wayne, I call him Wayne. It's a true story about a student whose name was not Wayne in my class. He was a sociopath. I mean, he was a piece of work. He was an eighth child, broken home, and highly dysfunctional. He wasn't good at much of anything. He wasn't good at school, so he didn't get good grades, didn't get any accolades there. He wasn't good at sports, so he wasn't wanted on any teams, or did he get picked on the playground when they were divvying up teams. He wasn't good at music, so he wasn't in band or choir or any of that kind of stuff. He just wasn't very good at anything. And he made an effort to be unpleasant. And so he would say, before he walked into school the very first day in the fall, he'd say, I hate school. I hate school. And he would grouse about it all. I hate school. He would write on his desk. He would carve up his desk. If you sat right ahead of him, he might write on you or cut your hair or cut your clothing. He just was antisocial. And so I had to kind of remove his desk from all the other students and put some margin between him and them and always keep one eye on Wayne. And I'm thinking, this is not a good place for a young lad to be in. Hates everybody and everything. And so how can I get his attention? Class? Affirm something. So one day I'd given an assignment and I was circulating through classes. Students were working on the assignment. Somebody didn't raise their hand. They need some help. So I'd make my way over to them and, you're Wayne. Okay. So I'm making my way around and I noticed that Wayne wasn't doing the assignment, but neither was he killing anybody. And so I thought, I'll take it. What he was doing is he had his chin in his hand and he just was kind of daydreaming out the window. Just, I could tell he was just deep in thought. So I made my way up behind him and I don't know why this story stays so fresh with me. I put my hand on his shoulder and he jerked his head up to look at me and I said, Wayne, I can tell you're deep in thought. I like that about a guy. I like a guy who's a thinker. And the look on his face was, he didn't say it in words, but this is what his face said to me. So that's what a compliment feels like. It's like he'd never had one. So I went about my business. I'm just circulating through the class, helping students with their work, but always keeping one eye on Wayne. And I would turn to look at him, and he would do this. Now, he's not doing his assignment yet, but what's happening? I'm gaining a hearing. I'm gaining a hearing. He hated everything. He hated Christmas. And so when the Christmas break came, just before the students were dismissed for however long it was, a week or 10 days or whatever it was, he came to my desk with a homemade Christmas card. He doesn't make Christmas cards. He hates Christmas cards. And he hates Christmas. And he hands me this card and he stands there. What's he want me to do? He wants me to read it in front of him. So I open it up and it was pretty... I don't remember exactly what it said, but it was definitely not store-bought. It was definitely homemade concoction of some kind. And I thank you, Wayne. You are a thinker because this is thoughtful. Thank you for being so thoughtful to give your teacher a Christmas card. I love this. And he said, I still hate Christmas. He went off on, he wasn't going to budge on that. But do you see how powerful one pat on the shoulder and one comment about, I like a thinker, and he was already changing his behaviors. People are thirsty for affirmation. You are. I am. Your husband is. All of us are. Our children are. 14-year-old, how am I doing on time? Okay. I'm supposed to leave time for some questions if you have any, so I'll try to leave time. I was talking about this subject. I had been invited to speak to Campus Crusade for Christ staff. That's back when they were called Campus Crusade for Christ. Had gathered from 5 states in Indiana and a couple hundred staff, and I had been talking on this subject, and we came to a break, and they dispersed, and we came back after the break for a different topic, and I was talking about that, and I noticed that one guy sitting right down here in the front was missing. He hadn't come back to his chair. No big deal. I just happened to notice. Later in the day, there was a lunch break, and he approached me during lunch, and he said, I don't know if you noticed, but I missed your second session. I said, well, I happened to notice, but, you know, is everything okay? He said, yeah, I want to tell you what happened. When you were talking about that affirmation stuff, he said, I recognized myself in there. I have a 14-year-old son, and I would estimate we haven't spoken to each other for 2 years. He goes to his room and shuts the door. And I realized, he's a good son. You'd like to have him in your family. You'd be happy to have him in your church. He gets, you know, pretty good grades. But I'm always on his case. You know, did you put your bike in the garage? You know, shoes untied. Don't be late for supper. You know, I just recognize I'm constantly correcting something in his life. And so I decided during that break, I'm going to call my son. This is in the days before cell phones. So I went and found a phone, and I called long distance to reach him. And my wife got him on the phone, and all I wanted to do was affirm him. So I just said, son, I just called. The only reason to call is to tell you, I'm glad you're my son. I'm glad God gave you to me to be my son. You're a good son. That's all. He said, my son talked to me for 45 minutes. And sorry, but whatever you were saying in your seminar wasn't as important as my son talking to me for 45 minutes. I totally agree. I tell that story to show the power. That's one phone call changed a closed relationship to a free-flowing relationship. This is important and powerful. One more, maybe two more. When one of our daughters turned 11, it was as though suddenly overnight, all the knowledge in the universe had been poured into her. And at that same moment, it had been sucked out of her parents to be put into her. And so she didn't need to listen to us because she already knew everything. And I recognized, if you want to gain a hearing, and she wasn't listening to her father, I've apparently been blowing it in this department. So I resolved, with God as my helper, I prayed about this. God, it is my earnest desire that she get more affirmation from me than from any other living human being on this planet. You know, assuming that Jesus doesn't count there because he's ascended. But if I have to stay up nights thinking of ways to affirm her, I will. Now, I'll just insert in here, it's not a good thing for an 11-year-old to turn off her dad, because then she will receive artificial affirmations from other males who want something in exchange for the affirmations. You pretty little thing. It's one of the keys to good affirmations is they come with no strings attached. You just say them because they're true. Glory to God. It's true. I saw a good thing. I point out the good thing. So it was shortly thereafter that after I had determined I need to turn it up in the affirmation department, that I went into her bedroom, and her door was open, and she was in there, and she was unlike her sister. Her sister was very, very orderly. All of her stuff was hung up in her closet on color-coded hangers. You know, all the pink hangers were, I don't know, blouses, and the green hangers are somethings, and whatever. And all of her shoes were in pairs, and all of her stuffed animals were lined up by height, and she was very orderly. This sister, whose room I had entered, let's just say there was a contrast. And she kind of used MBO, management by observation. Just kind of leave everything out where you can see it, and then you know where it is. You don't have to look through drawers or anything. It's just, you know, there it is right there. And but I noticed that over on her dresser, that I don't think my cord will reach that far, or I'd walk over to that table. She had stacked up the stuff on her dresser so that the tall stuff was in the back, and then there was shorter stuff in front, and then the little tiny things, I don't know, earrings or lipstick or something, on the front. I don't think she had lipstick back then, but chapstick. And so it was kind of stair-stepped. And I said, oh, I see the method here. This is great. This is very organized. This is something God would do. Can I say that? Who's the most orderly being in existence? God. He does everything decently and in order. And she's being orderly here. Because if you put the tall stuff in front and you want to get at the short stuff, then you knock over the tall stuff to reach back past it to get to the short stuff, and you don't even know if it's there because you can't see it because the tall stuff is an impediment there. But to stack it up the way she did, now they sell spice racks that are that way. So in your kitchen cupboard, you can have the stair-step thing. You can see them all. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so I just said, wow, this is something God would do. Cool. And then I walked out. There wasn't any, you know, you should pick up all your stuff here. You know, it's kind of a hazard or something, you know. Might have been true, but I just kind of picked my way through the tsunami stuff and made my way out the door. And it was shortly thereafter, I think it was, I don't know, maybe within a half hour, I was walking past and looked down the hall in the kitchen. She was in there hugging her mother. And I remember doing one of these. I was walking and went, whoa! I remember bending backwards. Whoa! I love that. I love when an 11-year-old is hugging her mother. I think it makes her mother happy. I think it's healthy between them. I think it's good for the 11-year-old. Makes this dad happy. I think it makes God happy. Can we say that when we affirm people? That they're making God happy? I think we should. That's what makes it God-centered. It's chiefly about pleasing Him and reflecting Him. And within a week or so, we had our daughter back, and she would ask my opinion about stuff, still does, she's got four children of her own. I'm saying to you that this is a tool that is free. You don't have to spend $29.95 and, you know, send in six box tops or whatever. This is free. Just do it. Ask God for eyes to see the good that people are doing and start telling them that they're doing the good that they're already doing. You don't have to talk them into doing it. They're already doing it. But behaviors that are rewarded tend to get repeated. Maybe I'll skip the pig farmer's wife. Should I take questions and then we'll be done? Are there any? Oh, you know. No, it's not about me. But she knows that my family had a pig farm up near St. Cloud for 10 years. And I went to high school with her mom. Aww. Okay, pig farmer, I had talked to a men's group about this thing, about affirming and the power it has, and that it's non-optional. I mean, you can not do it, but you'll get different results than if you do it. And so he decided that he was going to do this, and so he would be out working in the barn, and he'd think, you know, that was a really good breakfast, and I don't think I thanked my wife for that good breakfast. And so he'd pull out a little seed corn booklet that he kept in his pocket. He'd pull it, breakfast, stick it back in his pocket, and go about his work. And then a little bit later on, he'd be spreading manure in the field or whatever he was doing. He'd think, you know, he had three daughters, they have these cutest little pigtail little thingies that you put in there. I don't even know what you call them, but they're little things, and I wouldn't know where to buy them or how to put them in, or if they're the pigtail's too high or too low or where I but my wife puts them in there and they're charming. Pigtails. Put it back in his pocket. And he'd come in for lunch, middle of the day, and he'd be washing up, and he'd take his seed corn booklet and put it on the counter next to where he was washing his hands. He'd say, Marlene, I shouldn't give her name probably. That breakfast, I was still thinking about it a couple hours later. That was a good breakfast. Tasty. You anticipated your husband's preferences so well. That was very thoughtful. Thank you for that. And those little pigtail things you put in the girl's hair, those are so cute. What's for lunch? not particularly creative. It didn't have to rhyme or be flowery or be written in fancy longhand or anything. Just he was just affirming her. This was on a Saturday that I talked to the men's group that he was at. On Monday, she called me at my office. She said, whatever you talked about at that men's event last Saturday has made a difference in my husband. And so I'm thinking, okay, is it a good difference or what? I said, well, how does it seem to you? And I remember how she said these two words. It's wonderful. Not just, it's really good. It's wonderful, she said. Now, I say that to show that you don't have to have a PhD to do this. You don't have to be really particularly clever. You just have to pay attention and follow through. See good things and say, that was a good thing. That was a good thing, especially if it's a godly thing. Now, we don't have time here, but I have more slides here that we could show if we got to them, about dozens of character qualities that are in Christ in the Bible. And we want to especially commend those things when we see them in the people that are around us. When we see somebody, people say, how do you teach your children to tell the truth? When you see them tell the truth, applaud it, commend it, affirm it, saying, oh, you told the truth, especially when it was hard, like they admitted that they just flushed the goldfish down the toilet or whatever they did. If they did a hard thing, you know, I broke the lamp. Before you deal with the lamp, deal with the truth-telling. Deal with the more important thing, the image of Christ that is being reflected even before the child's a believer. The Spirit of God is at work in that individual, and you'll gain a hearing, and there's other rewards to come. But okay, any other questions that you want Missy to answer? Yeah. Yes. Yes, I consciously try and I don't always succeed. I don't think a person should feel guilty if every affirmation doesn't have G-O-D in it. But, you know, instead of commending my lovely granddaughters on their Easter dress and saying, what a cute dress, which it is, God must love you to have somebody give you a dress like that. So that puts the emphasis on the fact that they are a recipient of love. And God put that lover in their life. And I'm admiring the dress. So I'm not taking the dress off the table. I'm just saying there's more to it than just material. Because I think that's one way to make our children shallow and materialistic, is leave God out of it. So I don't say to my young grandsons who, you know, they like to do this now, you know, show you their biceps, you know, and stuff, you know, even if they're not there and you have to kind of imagine that they're there, you know, like, wow, God is really developing you. Is that true? Yes. And God gets the honor then. He gets the credit, but they like it. They like that grandpa notices that they're growing up and they're developing, but God is in the middle of all that operation. So, does that answer your question? Yeah. I think God put it on your heart to ask that question. I do. Are we done?